Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Telling you, bro, what's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting no more Peggy O's.
Fine folks of the internet, welcome back to the latest episode of The Riff Raff. My guest today is Mr. Tommy Malone. You know, there's just something about hearing somebody from South Louisiana who's born and raised here, got it in the blood. I mean, hearing them belt out a vocal or play a guitar solo, I can hear it a mile away. They just seem to have a certain thing to the way they phrase or in the delivery, and my guest today, Tommy Malone, certainly epitomizes that. Tommy is a New Orleans-based singer-songwriter and guitarist extraordinaire who, in my opinion, is sorely overlooked as one of the best of the New Orleans scene. A side note, his brother Dave Malone is one of the founding members of another one of the great New Orleans party bands, the Radiators. So Tommy's probably best known as being one of the founders and the lead singer of the Subdudes. Pretty cool band, came out of the New Orleans scene the late 80s, early 90s. They used a really unique instrumentation. They replaced their traditional drum kit with percussion and tambourine and accordion, bass, and guitar, and created their own funky version of New Orleans roots rock. I think he's made 11 records with the Subdudes, but he's got three of his own solo records that are really great. One of which I had the pleasure of working on called Natural Born Days a few years back. We'll talk about all that. He was also in a short-lived band called Tiny Town. That was a great band. We'll talk about that. So on a beautiful fall-like day in September in New Orleans, very uncharacteristic weather, Tommy came over to my house and we talked shop. And I gotta warn you, when Tommy and I get together, the maturity level drops considerably, and we are like instantly transported to fifth grade, so you'll hear a lot of laughs and goofing off, but in all seriousness, there's some good stuff in here, and you know, I think you'll get a lot out of it, and you'll enjoy it. If you haven't heard Tommy before, check out his music. And here we go, Tommy's tuning up, plugging into my little Vibrochamp, and we're gonna play a tune off of Natural Born Days and then get into it. Thanks for listening.
Riff Raff.
Just go.
You don't even have to do the whole song if you don't want. Just whatever you want.
Been on hearing, been on knowing.
Coming back.
You played on it.
I know, man. That's a while back. All right. Yeah, let's get it going. So I'm sitting in New Orleans at my house with my bro, Tommy Malone.
Hey, man.
Thanks
for enjoying this beautiful weather we got here, man.
It's amazing. I was walking my dog this morning around the block, and people are like smiling, and everybody's happy in a good mood. And I'm thinking, like, this is just an average day in Southern California.
I know. Weatherman last night said the cold front's moving
people
in.
People are like so excited.
It's going to be high of an 80. Be high of 80.
It's unbelievable.
Cold front.
People are like, wow, if it would be like that, that's what the neighbors are saying. If it would be like this every day, I would be. Uh-huh. That's called Southern California.
Yeah. Hence, I guess 9 billion people, right?
Exactly. I guess that's what makes you appreciate things more, though, is when you have, you know, delayed gratification, whatever, right? But man, I've been trying to get you on for a while. You know, we've been texting. And
I appreciate it.
Call it. And thanks for finally doing it.
Absolutely, man.
So, yeah, you know, man, we just talk and... Don't be too serious, because I know you're not a serious cat. We can be as goofy as you want.
I'm serious when I get down to work, but I'm total goofy.
You know,
I'm hanging out.
I'm not working, and I'm not a professional journalist.
Mm-hmm. Neither am I.
But man, you know, I thought I'd kick it off with a joke to just get the humor going.
All right,
you know?
Yeah.
I got this one. It's a pretty good one. So
is it one goat?
No, but you can tell one after. But. So let me see if I can get this straight. For those of you that are listening outside the southern Louisiana area, you know, Boudreaux-Thibodeau is sort of like a Bubba joke or something.
Right.
Yeah. So Boudreaux dies and he goes to heaven.
Uh-huh.
And St. Peter sees him kind of floating up, looking around. He goes, Boudreaux, over here. It's okay. This is heaven. I'm St. Peter. Come on in. And Boudreaux goes, well, what happened? He goes, well, you died, Boudreaux. Oh, what's going to happen? Well, you know, you've been a good Cajun man. You went to mass every Sunday. You've been faithful to your wife. He goes, you're not going to have any problem. Yeah, I'm going to make it as easy as possible for you to get in. He goes, you're just going to have to pass one little test. I'm going to make it easy. So spell love. Boudreaux goes, love? L-O-V-E. Very good. Come on in. Sit down. I'm going to go get the paperwork started. Just relax. You're done. Yeah, so Boudreaux's waiting around, and he looks around, he sees this old lady floating up, confused, like looking lost, and he goes, that's my wife. And he goes, Clotilde, what are you doing? And she goes, Boudreaux? And he goes, yeah, this is heaven. What happened? She goes, man, I was coming back from your funeral, and I was turning on the road, and a big cane tractor hit me, and I died. I guess I'm up here. And he goes, oh. He goes, listen. I know the man. You're not going to have any problem getting in here. And he said, you've been a good, faithful Cajun woman to me. And we, you know, been married to me. And we went to church every Sunday. He goes, look, you're going to have to pass one little test. I'm going to make it easy. Okay? Spell Czechoslovakia.
Yes.
Let's talk about some music shit before this thing gets completely derailed.
Sweet Clotilde was on the street every single day. I love that name, Clotilde, man. That's definitely one from my childhood.
All right, so let me. If you're still listening at this point, haven't shut it off yet. Tommy Malone. You know, I'm gonna have your bio. Everybody knows if they're listening. Is Tommy, founder of the Subdues, one of the greatest singers and great guitar player, man. To come out of New Orleans, although where are you and Johnny from? Edgar.
Well, born here. I was born in Hotel Dieu, which was used to turn into University Hospital. I think it might be closed now, but relocated. Lived in Houma for a while, and then ended up in Edgar. My father was from Mississippi, was in the Air Force, and met my mom, who was born and raised in Edgar. And then they bought a house from my grandfather, and then, you know, we ended up in in Edgard.
Edgard's around Luling someplace?
Edgard's up the river from Luling about 20 miles.
Okay, yeah.
Between Ama and...
Between a bunch of Bashry. Between a bunch of cane fields.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cane field, levee, river, all right there, you know.
What was it? I first met you 4 or 5 years ago. We were in... It was kind of a band. And we had fun rehearsing.
It was kind of a band.
It was really fun. I got to tell this story, man. It was me and you and David Torkanowski and Carlo Nucio, great drummer, and Johnny Allen. God bless his rest his soul. I know he was your bro.
Yeah, he was.
And Subdued's bass player, and he was funny as shit. I loved the guy. It turns out he knew a bunch of my cousins when, you know, they're older than me, but they all used to hang out together. It was really a really interesting time. But anyway, we would rehearse. By the time we'd make it through one song in the rehearsal, we forgot the arrangement. It was like so crazy. And then we could never, you were trying to figure out the name of the band. It could never decide on a name. It ended up being called Boulevard Junior, if I remember correctly.
Right. That was one of them.
That was the one that was advertised the most. And this is the genius part about where this name came from. In New Orleans, I should find the sign. It's on...
It used to be on Claiborne, I think.
Okay.
At the intersection.
They ordered all the street signs to say Martin Luther King Boulevard, right? Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Right.
But what happened was the signs got misprinted and they were up and they said Martin Luther King Boulevard Jr. So, hence the name Boulevard Jr. Yeah.
Yes.
That's genius.
That's pretty silly stuff, isn't it?
But Boulevard Junior, you could never really come up with that.
You couldn't come up with that because everybody would come in, I think, maybe suspecting that it was an old blues guy from Mississippi.
Boulevard Junior.
Boulevard Junior be up here momentarily, people.
Oh, shit.
If you're ready for some real download blues.
Yeah. Hey, listen, 90.7, that was Boulevard
Junior.
The old... Yeah, it's the old field recordings from Oxford, 1928.
Exactly.
Smithsonian.
A lot of you will remember his father, Boulevard Senior.
Boulevard Senior, yeah, I forgot about that. But anyway, we did that, and then I had the opportunity to play on your solo record, Natural Born Days, which, man, I love that record, man.
Thank you, man.
I really, really love that record.
I do, too. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things came together on that, and not the least of which was you being on guitar. You played beautiful stuff on there, man.
Oh, thanks, man.
I never told you. I should have. Everybody played great. We had David Hyde. We had... Doug Below, we had Cleary.
Yeah, John Cleary.
We had
Nigel Hall.
Nigel.
Yeah, Susan Cowsill.
Susan sang beautifully on it.
Yeah, that was
everybody played great, man. And John Porter really put that together quick.
We got your favorite
3 days.
I know. I remember it was really fast.
Yeah,
and really sounds great. I mean, man, you're one of my favorite singers, man. You got a great. You're. If I could sing like that. You know, I'd be rich. Well, maybe that's what you said too.
Yeah. You know, I never. That's so weird. For most of my life, man, guitar is all I cared about.
Really?
Yeah, I was deathly afraid of a microphone. I wouldn't go near it.
Are you serious?
Till the Subdudes, really. Till I was about 29.
Wow.
Terrified. I mean, I would do things, but reluctantly, you know. I was completely immersed in guitar. Guitar was the only thing I cared about, man. I was listening to everybody and everything I could, you know. And
I mean,
people
I
would say, "Well,
that.
Did you sing something?" And I'd be like shy and completely
I'm
weirded
surprised
out.
To hear that.
Oh,
wow.
I would not do it, man. And Subdudes, it's almost like by default, you know. Nobody wanted to do it in the Subdudes, and they kind of elected me, you know, and I started singing, and I'd say within a couple of years, I really started to like it a lot, you know. I started getting better at it. I started not feeling so self-conscious and weird about it, you know, and then trying to develop as a singer, you know, but man, it took me, I was a late bloomer for real. It took me a long time.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you totally. Definitely bloomed.
Well, thank you, man.
What makes a cat chase a mouse? What makes a home out of a house? What makes the world turn round and holds our feet down to the ground?
Hey, who are some of your influences on guitar? I know we've hung a bunch of times and we talked about, you know, Jeff Beck, if I had to guess, if I remember correctly, Jeff Beck. And Billy Gibbons and those cats.
Love him, yeah. Beck's probably one of my favorite on the planet. Just his ridiculous technique, you know. Mm-hmm. But I like all kinds of weird stuff, man. I like Django Reinhardt's an obvious one, you know. But Roy Nichols and these country players and Eldon Shamlin, the rhythm guitar player with Bob Wills and Texas Playboys. His rhythm guitar playing was like off the charts. I can't even.
He was a guy that Fender designed the Fender Twin for,
He wanted something cleaner and louder, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the first Strats went to Eldon, too, and given to him by Leo.
Wow.
I think. A gold one or a white one or a gold one. I think it was a gold one. And, man, you can listen to that stuff today. And to my ears, I haven't heard anybody reproduce that kind of sound yet, still. It's just, like, ridiculous, you know? So, man, I'm all over the charts, man. And I like, you know, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and B.B. King. And I just like it all, man. I think that's been my problem. I like too much different shit, you know?
I'm like that, too. I don't know. Yeah.
I just...
But that's what makes you more... it makes it more interesting to listen to as a player, you know? Because all that shit gets mixed together.
Yeah.
I hate to use that phrase because everybody uses it. It's a gumbo of styles.
Any review
you ever see from...
Right.
But it's true. It's a good analogy.
It is,
you mix
you
it
know?
All in a pot and...
But the magic is... If you can, if you're smart enough, or I don't know if it's just being smart, or if something direct, something in your instinct directs you to something, you know, like a contemporary guy that I think of is really, I hear two notes and I know it's him, is like Derek Trucks.
Mm-hmm.
That guy to me is like stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that he's a fantastic guitar player, particularly slide.
Yeah.
Plays good single note stuff too, but his slide playing is like, wow, man. I mean, guys have been doing this shit for, I don't know how long, 50, 100 years? I don't know how long. Slide's been around a long time. But,
right.
And you doing it, and you found this shit.
It's like this Indian.
That sounds
it's
like a, your yeah, stuff.
It's like an Indian phrasing thing. I think he mixed in there too.
Yeah.
He used to listen to this mandolin player, this fretless mandolin player who passed away. Yeah, I remember talking.
Oh,
about
he him. Did.
Yeah,
that's.
I mean,
what it
yeah,
is.
Derek's got a sound, and Sonny Landreth's
and
got
Sonny
a sound.
And Sonny Landreth's
you hear
another
it
one.
Immediately,
immediately, you know. True.
It's hard, man, on a to have your own sound. You know, because even Santana, who a lot of people diss, you hear it and you go, well, that's Santana.
That's Santana. Exactly what I mean. Yeah. Right. You know, I think he's great, but, mm-hmm. you know, if I was going to list my favorite, you know, I don't know necessarily that, you know, mm-hmm. but what you say is true. It's like, you know, he had the wisdom or whatever to know, and I kind of wish I had that. You know, I wish I... had stuck with something, you know, I'd be like, oh, well, that's, you know, I know that.
Well, there's still time, man. Maybe you could develop like a 10-finger
topic.
Look,
I'm going to give it another 10 years.
Tommy plays with two slides.
Two slides, and I'm going to have a fingerectomy. A fingerectomy.
Yeah, what about the,
I'm
you know what
six.
I use a lot
be
that
like,
I got
Hound Dog
from you?
Taylor, I'm going to have, well, I'll do three slides.
Let me tell you a lick I use a lot that I got from you. The Rick McNair lick.
Oh, Rick McNair.
Why don't you demonstrate what a Rick McNair is?
Let's see. Rick McNair.
You could also put the double stop.
Exactly.
Rick McNair.
Some idiot friend of mine in Nashville said that. A guy named Ferg, I think, told me that.
So
it was like,
good.
Oh, you idiot.
So
but
good.
It's so appropriate, you know?
So usable.
Some of these things in Nashville have become, kind of the quintessential, the hot shot licks.
Yeah, it's part of...
I'm trying to imitate the steel guitar, I guess.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, too, that for those of you that don't know, Tommy's older brother, Dave Malone, is Radiator from the Radiators. I don't know if he founded the Radiators, but he's a great player and singer, too.
Yeah, he was from the beginning.
Yeah, he's funny, man. You know, one of the funniest stories, I don't know if you told me or he told me, was the Beatles story.
Oh.
You got to tell that story,
which,
man.
The anniversary just passed. Well, in 1966, my birthday is September 16th, 57. Beatles came to City Park in New Orleans in 1964. Turns out on September 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Dave was 5 years older than me. Just at the right age, like, what, 13? Whatever that math is. My gazentas ain't good right now. So I was having, my mom threw me a big birthday party on my 7th birthday. Dave was 12. Yeah, 12. And Dave was all ready to go. His buddies had gotten the tickets. They were headed to New Orleans. I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Money.
See the Beatles in City Park.
Right.
At the last minute, my mom's, you're not going to some rock show. You're staying here to be with your brother on his birthday.
Tommy's birthday party. His shitty birthday.
And he was like, God damn it. Are you kidding me? So to this, he missed the concert, obviously. And to this day, man, he's pissed at me. It's like
50 years later.
50 years. I would be pissed too.
But tell him about the t-shirt he made.
Oh, damn it, t-shirt. Yeah, he had all the Beatles tour dates listed.
Beatles, North American
North
tour,
American
1964.
Tour. He scratched out September 16th, put Tommy's birthday.
That's great. Oh, my God. You're not going to see that
You're
band.
Not
going You're
going
to see
that
your
rock
little
band.
Brother Tommy's birthday party. Oh, my God.
Can you imagine that?
Bro, he's still not over that one.
No, he'll never be over that one. No. I mean, think about that,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
It's like, for us, you know, huge Beatle fan. I'm sure you are, too.
Yeah.
Good God. You get one chance and you miss it. Yeah. Yeah, that was a drag. Sorry, Dave.
I'm sorry, baby. But it will be the last time. I'm sorry, baby, but I didn't use my first smile. While the wailing on the wall went down, it's right.
You know what I thought was interesting? All the on some of the Subdudes records, which I'll admit I don't know every record. But some of the producers on there, maybe you'd have some stories about, like, Glenn Johns or George Massenburg.
Massenburg was a brilliant dude. God, so was Glenn.
Was it Andy or Glenn that did the Led Zeppelin stuff?
I think that was Andy.
Okay, they're
Glenn
brother.
Did some of the Who records.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff.
And I think he might have been engineering the Roof concert when the Beatles did that thing.
Right.
And worked on Let It Be too, but Andy did a lot of the heavy stuff. Andy Johns, of course. Glenn's son grew up to be Ethan, who's a producer,
mm-hmm.
a really good one
mm-hmm.
actually. Yeah, we flew. Glenn came to see us at the suggestion of Bernie Ledden, who had seen the band. And was good friends. He did Eagles records too.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn produced
mm-hmm.
a bunch of the Eagle records. The very first one, first
wow.
two or three at least. Peaceful, Easy Feeling, all that stuff. And Bernie had talked to Glenn about seeing us in Nashville back around 1990, 91.
and played him some stuff, I guess, you know. And Glenn flew. At the time, I was in Denver. We were all living in Denver around 90, 91. And Glenn flew in, and we put him up. I was living with some girl named Jill, I believe, at that time. And
hi, Jill.
Hey, Jill. Wherever you are, I know you ain't going to watch this silly thing. You can't watch it. It's radio. And, yeah, he came to watch a couple gigs, hung out with us a couple days, and then he said, yeah, I'd like to do it. Come, why don't you guys fly to England? So we went to his place, which is a beautiful countryside English estate, you know, with horses and stables. And he had converted the old horse stables to a studio. And was recording everything in there, analog. He had like his board. He built his console from. And it looked like the deck on the Star Trek.
Oh wow!
Yeah, you know, because he could do everything with his feet and hands. He was running the machines, turning on the reverbs. It was like a semicircle console. It was silver, stainless steel.
Wow!
And he did it all, man. He did everything. And two rooms, one little ISO room and then a big room.
Yeah.
And did his thing, which I think he gets credited for inventing the really the sparse mic technique. Mostly Steve was playing tambourine, but he played drums on two tracks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he did his usual, like, what is it, three mics, I think? Like two overheads and a kick, and got this beautiful sound, you know? It was like this old school guy that really knew how to put, make sound happen.
Proximity
with microphones
in the room and everything.
That.
Yeah.
And I loved the experience, you know? He put us upstairs in the studio and, you know, no bullshit. We just worked pretty hard and, it got a little testy about 10 days into it. He called John Magni a four-eyed.
Oh, my God.
think of the typical British insult. A four-eyed, I don't think it was bastard. It was, you know any British words?
Yeah, color with a U.
Four-eyed. Something anyway. What happened was, we were recording a song called "It's So Hard," and it needed, in John's opinion, it needed an edit. And Glenn was all about like keeping the integrity of the track, right? And John said something to the effect of, "Oh, I can't believe you're gonna let a little technical problem ruin the art." Glenn blew up, "You four-eyed cheeky bastard," and started parading around the studio, and the whole thing came to a screeching halt.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It just, we were all just like, he got really, really pissed off with that comment. "I've worked with the Beatles, I've worked with the Who, I dare you say that to me." So we're outside, like, trying to get some lunch, and he's screaming at John. And then, like, man, it might have been even that day or the next day. The funds had not been sent from the record company, right? You're supposed to get a payment at a certain time, you know, and organize it with his staff. He had a staff. And so the money stopped. So everything stopped. He kicked us out of the...
Oh.
I mean, well, he didn't kick us out. We had our rooms upstairs, but he shut it up and locked it up and says, "We're not doing a thing until the money shows up, man."
Yeah.
So that got weird.
Awkward.
And then we had a long weekend. It got sorted out. We all went off and drove around English countryside and, you know, stuck our feet in the water and shit. And they finally got the money right. Glenn and John made up, and we continued on.
I might be wrong. Will I have to pay all my
It was a trip, man. It was like another world. I had a blast, but you know.
Didn't you guys have some? Now, Carlo Nuzio, who's, those of you that don't know, Carlo's a great drummer, man.
He's
like a New Orleans Jim Keltner, you know.
He is.
And he's a great guy. I mean, I haven't seen him in a long time, but he was in the band, Boulevard
Carlo,
Dream.
I just, you know, after 10 minutes in the same room with you, you know, I just have to take a break. But, you know, I love you, Carlo.
but he told
me. He is a fantastic drummer.
He was telling me the story, and I don't know what the scenario was. Was it something with Dave Stewart or something? You were at his house in L.A.? Or
Yeah. We mixed our...
The tennis court story. tell him the tennis court story.
We did our first album in L.A. with a guy named Don Gaiman, who at the time was famous for doing Little Pink Houses, Mellencamp.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, had a huge hit with it. I think that's right. Yeah. And we cut... Somewhere else. Oh, we cut it Sunset Sound, as a matter of fact, is where we cut it. And we mixed at Dave Stewart's place, the Eurythmics mm-hmm. guy, for those who don't know. And gorgeous place, right? Built, he called it the chapel, looked like a chapel, built like a church, all wood, beautiful pictures of, you know, like the Wilburys had just come in there
mm-hmm.
and done stuff, you know. He's friend, you know, he knew all those people. Course, and that freaked me out. Just pictures of Harrison and Orbis and Dylan. I mean, it was like, what? And there was a tennis court for our downtime. You know, for those who don't know, when you're mixing a record, there's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of technical plug in, listen, check this out, listen some more. The producer sends you out to kill some time, and it gets boring after a while, you know. So we had access to tennis courts out there. So Carlo was living in L.A. And he said, why don't you come out, man? You know, we can just hang out, maybe play a little tennis, a little b-ball, you know, get some lunch.
Totally innocent.
So I don't think the guy had ever held a tennis racket in his life. So he shows up in brand new white tennis shoes, brand new white socks, brand new white wristbands, brand new white headband, brand new white tennis shirt with collar and emblem. And we just fell on the ground laughing. He got out there and he couldn't even hit the thing, you know. And it was fabulous. It was fabulous. So that was Carlo.
But that's not the best part of the story, was all the marks the tennis shoes made on his tennis court.
Oh, right. He had the wrong kind.
And they made streaks all over his tennis court.
He had the wrong soles. That's right. He got the kind with the black sole. That's right.
Carlo said he was so pissed. Dave Stewart came out, and there's like 1,000 black marks. Oh. You know, somebody told me this. I don't know if I think it was Daryl. Daryl told me this. It's either at Dave Stewart's place or it's George Harrison's place. I think it was George Harrison. You had to like sign some agreement where you couldn't take pictures or anything. But mm-hmm. inside the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
When you sit, when you turn, like if you're sitting on the toilet, you close the door, there's a door faces you right in front of you, and it's a life-size picture of Bob Dylan sitting right on that same toilet taking a dump. So when you're sitting down, you're looking at Bob Dylan. It's like you're looking in a mirror, and it's Bob Dylan, the picture.
Boy, am I too brain dead to remember if that was the same place?
I don't think it was that place.
I don't think it was that place.
Because Wilburys, that's why I thought of that.
Yeah, it sounds like
something George Harrison. Are you still playing your Gibson Chet Atkins?
I am, yeah.
Those are great guitars.
It's a weird one, you know? Not a lot of people use that thing. And you can't even really find that particular one anymore. I've looked on eBay because I was seeing all these horror stories at David Doucette just had his Collings OM1. You see that posted? Mm-hmm. Destroyed by Southwest.
Oh.
Just bashed a hole in the side of it. Just like yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. And I fly that thing all the time. Of course, it's solid body, but you can't... It's an old... It's solid mahogany. It's got a fake sound hole.
Right.
It's the little bags pick up in the bridge with the active electronics. I had God, I space out on names. The Pleck guy in Nashville invented the Pleck for Gibson.
I don't know what a Pleck is.
The Pleck machine. It does fret work.
Oh, okay.
In a machine. He repaired all the Nashville guy stuff after the flood.
Not Joe Glazer.
Joe Glazer. Okay, Thank you. Yeah, Joe Glazer put in. I figured, you know, like I got this thing here, which is for a solid acoustic like guitar, you know, it does a pretty good job.
Yeah,
you know, nothing like the real thing, like they say, but of course. But for what it does, it sounds pretty good. It's got a pretty unique sound. But I wanted more out of it, so I got Joe. I bought a Lahler mini humbucker, and I used that space in there. I just kind of pulled the paper out of it, and there was a little plastic insert, and then I just kind of put a couple screws in there, and he wired it in to a little mini switch, so I can go from acoustic electric to me it sounds like a Les Paul Deluxe, you know. It's got that same kind of thick, but not too thick.
Yeah,
you get a little air quality to it, like more of a cross between a Fender and a Gibson. And I love it. It sounds great. So now that's all I travel with. I can do the all the Subdued stuff was cut on either that guitar or an old cheaper version that Johnny Allen had bought, really cheap, like $250 Yamaha or something, or Ibanez. I guess it was Ibanez. They were the first, I think, to make those with the. It might have even been hollow, or chambered or something, or hollow. Same concept, bridge pickup. And, you know, it was Glenn, as a matter of fact, this is another Glenn story. Glenn referred to it as, "You're not going to play that bloody plastic guitar, are you?"
He was talking about
the Czech. Oh, it's not plastic. It's mahogany, goddammit. He was all about real stuff, you know.
Oh, man.
He was all about, he had an old vintage Martin. He had every Tweed amp you've ever known. Or he had them brought in. It was actually Pete Townsend's collection, some of his Tweed collection from your champs, but the old, all the Tweed champ, the Tweed Deluxe, the Tweed, all the way up the line. And he's like, brought him in one day and he says, "Take your pick."
Yeah,
and I'm like, "Oh, Jesus Christ!" But anyway, so, you know, even it was like the fact that it was different and weird gave us a sound. I think.
I think some of the cheaper guitars have character to them.
They do, you know. And I'd run it through an amp or run it through a tube pre. It would warm it up enough.
Yeah.
But you couldn't really tell what it was. It sounded like some guy playing a jazz box, clean, or. Yeah. Or Strat real low volume or something. Sorry about that.
Thank you for taking it.
But yeah, you know, and then in a later period, I started playing real guitars with the Subdues. I was playing a Gibson J45.
Like behind you, that's mine.
I got an old 61 J45.
Yeah.
And I was playing that, and I had ear monitors, and I was playing a Stratocaster for the slide and everything, which I like doing that. I love playing the slide. And then I started hearing, well, not regular fan people, but like people that knew us from the beginning, you know, friends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, it's cool, you know, but it, you know what? It sounded kind of cooler with the old thing, you know, and because I had that guitar in the closet for like 10 years.
The Chet.
Yeah, I didn't even touch it, and I felt like drug it back out, and I started playing these songs again. And they did sound better. You know, they sounded more like the records and shit.
To the darkness and sadness this life has sent her. Carry on and have yourself a lovely ride. Think of me when you finally side.
You know, you used to play the nylons even sound better, I think. I remember seeing Steve Dregs, the Dixie.
Steve Morse.
Steve Morse play one at Tips. I'm talking 80, somewhere between 80 and 85 maybe. And God dang, that thing sounded good. It sounded like the real deal to me. I don't know a whole lot about classical guitar, but it sounded...
Yeah.
It sounded pretty real. It sounded good. And I remembered that, too, when I was out shopping for this other one, which I found in New York. And I think it was a special order because it was sitting in the Gibson showroom in New York City, and it was unclaimed. And I was there, and I had the money in my pocket, and I was like, And I was like, who's that? What's that for? Who's that for? And I'm really glad I got it because I really haven't seen another one.
They're hard to find now.
They are.
Then even if you find one, it might not be as good as the one you have.
Yeah. And the later ones, they eliminated the sound hole and they started putting these goofy star markers in the...
Oh, yeah.
You know? It looked like, you know, Branson.
Branson.
Looked like Branson.
Rick McNair. There's like one guy listening to Branson right now. Fuck this, I'm turning this shit off now. Anyway, you're a big Ry Cooder fan, right?
God, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, love him, man.
Me too.
Yeah.
I've said this several times on this podcast, but I swear, man, there's tracks I listen to Ry Cooder, like Mavis Staples and some of that stuff with Keltner playing.
Mm-hmm.
That guitar is out of tune, like sharp or something. It sounds so good.
How do you make it not?
It just sounds even better.
I know, man. He's got a... It's odd for a Southern California guy. I grew up in Santa Monica. He's got this deep, deep old soul going on. I don't know what it is, but it just...
And I don't mean to say he always sounds out of tune. There's just a couple of tracks I've heard going,
yeah,
I know that guitar. Doesn't sound... Wow, it sounds good.
Yeah, right, right.
And Cornell Dupree's the same way, man. He plays stuff.
Him too,
you know.
Man.
Yeah, well, that kind of
what
stuff.
What is that?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, I love that old song.
All that kind of...
Yeah, right.
Love that stuff.
I do too, man.
I should have never moved to Hollywood.
You know what tune I really love?
What's that?
And I wrote it down. No Reason.
The
verses on No Reason, man.
Talking about guitar stuff, you know. But I always liked you know, mostly I was an ear guy and I listened to thousands of records, probably just like you, hanging out in front of a stereo, right? And I got to New Orleans, you know, I got turned on to this guy, Space Out Again, boy. I need a memory pill.
My memory banks, like Max says.
The jazz guy at Hank Mackey. Jeez. Do you know Hank?
I don't know him. I've heard of
heard
him.
His
is he a court melody kind of jazz?
He's just a brilliant
North Shore
guy.
Maybe.
Lives on North Shore, teaches at Todd's.
Yeah.
And he used to teach in Lakeview. When I was 18, 19, I started going.
I've definitely heard of him. Yeah.
Just learn more about the key, the fingerboard, you know, because, man, I was a total ear guy, you know. I mean, basic stuff, but
it was like, shit, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I want to know why stuff works, you know. And Hank really answered all kind of questions. But I know early on I got into like, I wanted to always use open strings, you know, because open strings are like, they just sound the purest, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you could squeeze them in somewhere in some riff, you know, mm-hmm. they just sound good, like, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. stuff with the little half step thing.
Yeah, right.
You know, and at those kind of like, but you were talking about this song we're getting ready to play, and I was looking at how I could do it without moving the least.
Yeah,
I want to do it without moving my fingers too much. Mm-hmm. Then I could sing. So it really goes from this, like this major nine to the seven. I don't know if you use that kind of stuff.
It's like an E over
a lot of guys
over
don't just look like stuff real close. You know what yeah. I mean? They look like,
right.
Oh, I got to go to an E. I'm yeah. okay. I'm up here.
It's cooler.
If I can find them and find some shared tones, you know,
yep.
to me it sounds just smoother.
Juicier.
I don't have to sing and I don't have to think so much. I can concentrate on the vocals and stuff. So I love stuff like that.
I'd like your vocal melody on that too. I mean, I played on that track and I'd never
you
really paid attention.
You played beautiful on that track, man. You did, but because it's only going between those two chords, you made it sound like there was this movement going up, like it kept moving, you know? It was really cool, and I'm sorry, I'm so... This was written with a friend of mine by the name of Jim Sherrick, and no reason, no reason, no reason at all. You can't have exactly what you want. Go the verse. All it takes is an open mind. Life, faith, and a touch of grace. Different path to a better place. 2, 3 now. Try to see things in a different light. You see wrong, it might be right. Surrender to the universe. Life.
That melody, man. It's so, it feels like it never resolves, kind of in a good way.
Yeah.
No reason at all. You can't have exactly what you want. All it takes is an open mind, little love, and a little time. Of grace, different path to a better place. Try to see things in a different light. You see wrong and it might be right. Surrender to the universe.
Yeah, well, it's like, I guess because there's only two chords, I felt like, geez, where is it gonna go?
It's two chords in the truth.
There you go. The Nashville. Tiny Town was, for people who don't know, it was me, Johnny Allen, who we talked about earlier, my friend Pat McLaughlin, singer-songwriter out of Nashville, and also the drummer you mentioned that was on the Maria Muldaur album.
Kenny's still with John Hyatt. Great
with
player.
John Hyatt. Played he's also Sonny just Landon got a gig with... John Prine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I love Kenny. And
Kenny's a monster.
And then you had
drummer.
Johnny Neal on keyboards.
And Johnny Neal came in at the last
friends.
Minute. because of Bernie Ledden knew him, and he asked us if we wanted keys, and yeah, maybe, I guess, yeah. And he said, well, I know a guy, you know. And he brought in Johnny Neal, man, who was...
You don't know Tommy Malone from New Orleans?
I'm like, nah, man, I've heard of him.
Yeah, oh, Tommy, oh, woo, man, you got to hear him.
Oh, oh.
Sounds just like...
he's a trip, yeah, boy.
I love Johnny.
He's a blind, crazy, genius,
prodigy
keyboard player. Yep. And he came in, we'd never met, never even heard of him. And he had Bernie one by one. He'd play the track. We'd cut all the basics, you know. Bernie played it once. Johnny being there.
Rocking
with a can of beer.
Yeah.
Rocking, listening. He said, all right, play it again. And he cut it the second time.
Yeah, and it's it.
It. Everything. The hit, the dynamic stuff. The with the drums, you know. Change.
One take.
We're like... We're all. I wish I had a picture because we're all staring through the glass at the window, watching Johnny Neal like this. Like,
oh man, I know. I've been. I watched him one time do a whole session, a whole string part section to like 10 songs in one pass. He just roll. All right, rolling down. And he'd just come up with these brilliant, like George Martin Beatles, like cello parts, every tune. And well, all right, roll the next tune. Unbelievable. But yeah, are there any tracks that stand out that you like on the? Because you guys only did one record, right? Tiny Town.
Tiny Town only did one. Yeah, we ran. It was Pioneer Records. It was a little Japanese company, as I recall. We ran them out of business real quick.
You use up all that yen.
We ran them out.
A lot of yen to make.
Okay, we're gonna spend. We got a fold now. These Tiny Town fellers have sold 18 copies.
Were there any comparisons to Little Village, Tiny Town?
Well, that was our inspiration.
Okay, that's
for the name. We were having a conversation about them guys.
So Boulevard Junior, the signs hadn't been minted yet.
So
that was a long time still to come. Yeah.
And we knew, not well, Johnny knew Hyatt pretty well. I'd met him. I didn't really know him, but... I was hoping I could have met Cooter, you know, but, and I think we were joking about that, you know. Well, shit, if they can be Little Village, we can be Tiny Town, you know. And it was like, okay, that sounds good. You know, it was just one of them goofy ass conversations.
Small municipality.
Exactly. Right. Right.
Yeah, man.
But I don't know, man. All of those, the one I enjoyed most playing guitar on, was a song called "Don't Let Time Run Out." I don't know if it was this thing that was just this moving line. Oh, I'm in. Never mind. I'm not gonna tune.
I think you could play it on here if you want. I think I remember
just
this
riff with the walking bass line. If you feel like tuning it, but it's
nah,
just
go ahead.
Come to Papa, don't you come too quick. I got a Bible, but it ain't too thick.
To just rock, play rock and roll on him.
Looking in the window of a shop downtown, a lonely mannequin in a flannel nightgown. I might be crazy, but I think I see that plastic girl staring back at me.
Let me sidetrack for a second. Didn't Bonnie Raitt actually ask you to join her band once?
Well, you know, it was floating around out there, you know. It was floating around for sure, you know. I never got officially asked, but, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but it came up. yeah. through our manager, Tim, out in California, that was managing her too. And I think she just didn't because she liked what we were doing.
Yeah, know? And you probably and couldn't. Didn't want it, it would have been it would have disrupted everything you were doing at the time.
Yeah. Too. Although you know it would have been nice. That would have been a blast.
Yeah.
You know.
But look at those people. Look at the body of work you have with the sub dudes.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff now. But wow, she's great. Jesus, that would have been. You know, God, I love Bonnie. I love Lil George's stuff.
Lil George.
Yeah, man. Like I say, Derek is a freak.
Sonny's do you still use that? Kind let's of a talk freak. About Lil George because I forgot about Lil George. That's like your main, probably one of your main. Because you guys toured with Little Feat. I know Lil George was gone by that point, but Little Feat was a pretty big influence,
oh,
right?
Oh, God, yeah, man. Yeah. It's weird, you know. I listen to all that stuff, and unlike my bro Dave, like, he could probably just sit here and start just playing you all those tunes. And
yeah.
I'm more of a... I kind of took it, you know. And, I mean, I listened to it a lot, but I didn't... learn it a lot, yeah. you know, but I just like to listen to these guys' approaches and stuff, you know, and shit, I don't know, man, you know, do you play slide at all?
I do on it's not my favorite thing to do. I've done it on sessions and records, and I sometimes rarely live will I do it, but yeah, I have. I've done a few sessions here in town, whereas me and Sonny, it's like I'm not going to even take a slide out of the case if he's there.
Well, yeah, that's a little scary.
Because he's, you know, those guys are, it's what they do, man.
You don't have a slide, do you? I didn't even bring
one. Yeah, I do.
One.
I actually do.
At the dark end, you know that one? At the dark end. You should play with me.
So, yeah.
Some thoughts? Some
hydrogen in your coffee, man.
I'd take some more.
You like that coffee mug?
I like that coffee.
I gotta make some more coffee.
My wife said, take out the garbage. I said, you cooked it. You take it out.
When I was a boy for Christmas, we were so poor, we got batteries, toys not included.
That's great.
I love it.
That's great.
Yeah. What kind of tuning were you using? I mean, I'm going like completely crazy.
Yeah, we're going off the thing here.
What kind of tuning was that?
You're right.
Open G?
The floating tail is really hard to get in tune, but on my goal when it's a block, I got it blocked. And I use, well, that's open G, and I use open D a lot and open E. But that's about it. I don't go
need.
Much beyond that. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not quite the freak that Sonny is, but But I sure love it. You know, I really love doing it. You know, it feels comfortable.
Yeah.
I did it a lot. When I first moved to town, I played with my brothers. We had a band called Dust Woofy and some goofy name that some hippie chick made up for the little lint that collects under your bed, you know? They call it a Dust Woofy. And so they, you know, it was hippie days. So I thought, oh, that's a cool name. Let's use that one. That's cool. So it was Dave, my brother John, who a lot of people don't know is a fantastic, talk about a meat and potato bass player. Kind of, he played like, John was a cross between Carl Radle and, shoot, man, maybe Duck Dunn or something.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And he just, he, well, things happened. He met a woman, moved to Virginia, bass got stolen, he just quit. He was a fantastic bass player. But anyway, John was on bass. Dave was playing. Dave was married to a woman named Susie Malone. You might see her around town. She still sings sometimes at Buffa's Lounge. She was with the Pfister Sisters. You know, they did that old Boswell music.
Yeah.
And I came in. I got out of school in the senior year in January. Couldn't wait to get out of school. And I came to New Orleans, and then I joined Dust Whoopi. So I was... started playing slide with that band because I was. Then we were playing a lot of stuff like Jackson Browne songs, and it was Lindley was playing the slide stuff, and I didn't know what he was doing. Right, I'll hear it, but I didn't really know what he was doing, so I played it all in standard. I was playing his parts in standard, so I learned all that stuff in standard. I was using a pig nose as a preamp.
Oh wow!
Through a Fender, through a twin, or a, no, no. A pig nose through a super.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so a then cool sound.
But it was a great sound, and I learned it all in standard. And then I realized, I read some article in Guitar Player later. It was like, oh, yeah, well, you know, if you want to make it easier on yourself, just tune to an open chord, you know. It's just when I started looking at the open E, and it was like, oh, holy shit, that's a lot easier.
Oh.
So I had to relearn everything.
That's before the internets.
Exactly. Exactly. We got all our info from conversations in a bar and the monthly issue of Guitar Player back in the day. As a matter of fact, remember Tommy Tedesco had
a
monthly column, and there were electronics guys that would put things in there for you to build schematics and shit. And Howard Roberts had a column.
Yeah.
And man, it was just, I don't know, it was... that was more gratifying to me when you had to work for it a little bit. You know, don't you agree?
I agree. I've talked about this before. It's such a powerful thing they have, you know, with YouTube, like learning. It's unbelievable now what you could do. Like, say you want to learn Sly. I hear Tommy and I want to learn, you know, open G. You go on YouTube, there'll be
a thousand
guys teaching you things.
And that song, probably.
And really, what would be the most valuable would be to pick one. But how do you know if it's any good or not? Or have a guy down the street who's a good guitar player sit with you and show. You know, it's never going to take the place of that. Because then you just get, like, so scattered. Like, you're watching one thing, and then there's five other things. Watch next. You know, variations on G.
Yeah.
This is like, it's too much.
Right.
It's too much.
Whereas if you're doing it... less so with the articles, because they could get very specific. But a lot of times they didn't. They would. I remember Tedesco always saying, you know, follow yourself, man. You know, don't, you know, just do your thing. At least that's what I recall. But when you're listening to records, like, just like this thing, you know, they can only imagine what what we're doing here. They don't know we're naked, you know.
Yeah. But they can't see that mound of coke on that table right
exactly. So where was I? Yeah, but so when you, learning it off the box like we used to, at least I used to, and man, it was so mysterious. You know, it was like you probably did it wrong at least a few times before you got it, but in the process you kind of learned some cool shit about what else you could do with it. And it took you a little time, and the fact that it took you a little time, it was more gratifying, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, wow, I'm proud of myself. I just sat down with this thing for an hour and I figured the damn thing out, man.
Yeah,
I got it. I dig that, man. And I like the fact my daughter's a creative writer at NOCA now, and she's all about what you're doing, the podcast thing, which thrills me, man. Her two favorite things, which thrills me to death, is her tree swing that I put up for her. She spends 2 hours a day on that thing, just loving it, you know, just disconnected from electronics and makeup and trying to be hip, and podcasts, which stories, listening to stories. Man, that's, to me, that's cool shit. That's getting your brain back. You know, my dad always referred to the damn, I'm sure yours did too, as the idiot box. Always called the TV the idiot box. Did your dad call it that?
No, he didn't, but I've heard it. I've heard it.
My dad always said, if you just get away from that idiot box for a while, you might be able to do something, boy.
It's definitely paralyzed original thinking, I would say. But you know, the computer's the same way, man. To me, it can be even more destructive, you know, because it's so much. It's just, I don't watch TV mostly because I can't take the commercials, but I haven't watched TV in years, man. We barely watch it. But this has absolutely nothing to do with guitar playing.
You know, this is an interesting, this I just bought off of eBay. It's a 93 body. And when I was in Denver in 1988, I lived up there for about 3 years, 4 years. I found this 61 Jazzmaster that had been stripped of the paint, and one of the pickups was non-original, and something else had been taken off of it. So it kind of lost a lot of value. I get they're not blowing at me.
No, it's just that's
the you know, for collector nerds, you know, when you lose the paint job on a vintage thing, you lose a lot.
Right.
So. But I love this neck. It's an old 61 Jazzmaster neck.
Oh, yeah. I just slapped that
on here. And I feel that. I just love the way that feels.
Oh, yeah, man.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
It's just like, I use that.
Pretty high action.
I had that on my gold body for a while. That's what I cut the Tiny Town record on. I had this neck on that gold guitar that I now play slide on, which now has a maple neck. But back then, I hadn't bought this yet. And I loved this so much, I put that on the gold body with, I believe I got Lindy Fralin. A lot of guitar players will know what that is.
Yeah, pickups.
Lindy Fralin pickups. And through a Buddha amp. There was a guy named Jeff Bober. He also wrote a column for Guitar Player for a while, I think. He's out of Baltimore, I believe. He builds these amps called Buddha. Used to. B-U-D-D-A.
I remember those. Yeah.
And I have one of the old original ones. It's like a little 18-watt, 212 thing. And I think they got bought up by Peavey, so they're being made, I guess, in Meridian. Now,
maybe not even more. Maybe not even Meridian. In China now, unfortunately, because Peavey used to
be China,
totally self-contained, man. In Meridian, they'd make everything, do everything. I don't know anymore.
Yeah, but I know their PC board amps now. Mine's old-fashioned, hardwired. Mm. It's a good sound rig. It's just pure tone. It's 18-watt.
Yeah, Tommy, thanks, man, for coming by while I'm in town and hanging and
absolutely.
All your stories.
My pleasure, man.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you asking me, you know.
Absolutely.
I really do.
And let's go get lunch, man.
Yeah. That sounds like something for real right there.
For real, though.
For reals.
Catfish fry. You know something's cooking at the social and pleasure.
All right, thanks for tuning in. If you stuck with it this long, thank you so much. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you made it through all the bad jokes, laughs. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, my side always aches when Tommy comes over. Yeah, I have some more great episodes coming up. I just hung with Dave Grissom. It was last week, so I'll try to get that one up in the next few weeks. Working on a few more. Doing this on my downtime during the day. I'm about to finish this tour, so as soon as that happens, I've got some other things coming up that are going to keep me sort of occupied, so I hope I can keep these
coming out as frequently as I have been. But as always, thank you for your comments and the great reviews, the great comments. I'm flattered and honored you guys listen to this and like it. And, you know, thanks for spreading the word. And see you next time.
He said, man, just come on in and see for yourself.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.